Sloppy seconds. Sloppy. S O L. There's another letter. Whatever. How you spell it? That's what Atlanta's getting. Nailed it. Best intro ever. Welcome to the Who Dat Confessional Podcast, where today we're talking about the start of free agency. And in typical New Orleans fashion, it's pretty slow. it's going in the normal New Orleans way of taking their time and doing whatever they want to do. We're letting everybody else go first. I mean, granted, they did get Derek Carr. So I guess don't want to set the expectations too high. But a couple names that you're seeing the Saints miss out on in terms of bringing back, though, could be mixed opinions. And we'll talk about that here in the chat tonight. You know, are you okay with Caden Ellis gone? David Onyemata gone? Marcus Davenport gone? Look, I told the chat, and I'm not saying this in a braggy way. What I'm about to say is not meant as a brag. It's meant to be more of a, you weren't going to keep everybody. I told everybody that you would have somebody willing to pay Marcus Davenport, right? I just think it was unescapable. At the same time, $13 million is a lot of money. That's more than I thought he would get. I thought he'd be closer to about $10 million, but still, you see why he leaves. David Onyemata, big contract. And you see him go to Atlanta, 3 years, big money. Then you see Caden Ellis end up going to the Falcons. And the Caden Ellis one, I kind of understand. I'm not saying I'm happy about it, but I understand it. You know, the Caden Ellis one, he wasn't going to start in New Orleans. And if you're a player like Caden Ellis, you've earned a right to start in this league. I think he showed last year that he's earned that right. He deserves a chance to get out there. So I can't fault him for that. At the same time, it sucks because you now are losing depth. If you want me to explain to you how you cannot feel too bad about it, well, he turns 28 this summer. So it's not like Caden Ellis was a secret, like 23-year-old who, you know, came up and just blew up. He is one of the rare developmental guys in the league. And then he signed a 3-year, $21.5 million deal. $7 million a year to go in and be a starter. Again, I have no problem with this, but he wasn't going to be a starter in New Orleans. The only starter that you have so far lost is David Onyemata. But you've lost two very, very key depth pieces. I mean, Mark Davenport is a starter, so let me go ahead and semi-correct. Davenport was a starter, but Davenport was also splitting a lot of reps, and he was injured a lot. So, yes, he was a starter. Let me go ahead and correct. But of his 63 games in a Saints uniform, he was a starter for 32 of them, and he would miss significant amount of time. So you did see other guys step in and be that guy. But your full-time starter was really David Onyemata there. You've lost some big names, though. It's a very different team now. Very different. And then you see a aging Cameron Jordan taking the restructure, which you know is going to happen. They're designed like that. And then you've got Alvin Kamara, Marshawn Lattimore, all these restructures happening. You've got Michael Thomas now has signed a 1-year deal. And Jameis Winston has signed a 1-year deal. And if you're looking at the Saints roster in terms of who's left, going, okay, well, who do we actually have as our depth chart right now? This screams we need to address defensive line. You're starting defensive lineman. If you were to go with a 4-3, which is what they will run, you are going with Cameron Jordan as your starter. Then you've got Carl Granderson on the opposite side, Peyton Turner somewhere in there, Tano Passignon somewhere in there, and that's about it. Is Malcolm Roach going to come back? We'll wait and see. Is Kentavious Street going to come back? We will wait and see. You know, the Saints have gone from having, just a couple years ago, a deep defensive line set to basically there's nobody on the roster. And I'm not trying to be dramatic with this, by the way. It's just a fact. I'll tell you what, got a lot of people coming in. I'm going to go ahead and shout out those who are in the chat. Appreciate you, Bim. Cliff, Michael Borlon, Chemo, Crass, Mike. Good to see you, Mike. King Troll. You are the King Troll, but we love that you're here. Cliff, Jimbo, Jonathan, Ant-Man, James, Platypus, Mocha Chocolaka Khan. Good to see you. Lester, Crass, Jonathan, Soul, Vision, Gerald. Some of our regulars here. Good to see you. Millie, most of our players weren't our rivals. Even the Vikings are our rivals. I don't think the Vikings are our rivals anymore, but you did see them going away. Kudat to y'all coming on in. And it's tricky, right? You know, it's you look at this, and there's a reason to, I don't want to say hit the panic button, but you definitely can't go into the rest of free agency, nor can you go into the draft and not take defensive linemen, right? I think it's impossible. You have to do it. Now, after the restructures, for those curious, the Saints cap space is currently $560,000 positive. So all these moves they're making, which are planned moves, have now moved them into the positive. They're no longer in negative cap, which would make a lot of y'all happy. There are still other moves to be made. For example, if they do Andres Pete's going to free him up, I think, another $4.5 million. If they did, I'll have to go back and check, but they're in the positive now. I think they're still, I don't believe they've done DeMario. They did DeMario, right? Have they done DeMario Davis yet? They have the option of a couple of smaller contracts, but in essence, the Saints have gotten back into the positive, and now you've got to start going after kind of like those depth guys in free agency. You can make some moves, but there's not a lot of big moves to be made anymore in terms of contracts. Now, you can push things out more and more, and this is where you get the wonderful people like Nick Wright out there really harping on how terrible the Saints are. Because right now, for 2024, the Saints cap space is listed at negative $110 million. Then you go up to 2025, the Saints have $25 million in cap space. And then 2026, they have $123. So per normal, they are doing their borrow, and see what happens. But as it sits right now, let me go over the active contracts by position. They're just going by defensive linemen. Here's who you have actually contracted: Cameron Jordan, Peyton Turner, Carl Granderson, Tano Passignon. You've got Jabari Zuniga, who was a futures contract, and then Malcolm Roach, who I thought was a free agent, but Malcolm Roach actually appears to still be on contract. I thought he expired this year. He did. Unless he's re-signed and I missed it. But he's a free agent. So you've got basically a bunch of defensive ends and a rotational three tech in Tano Passignon. So if you are sitting there out in draft land, fantasy land, free agent land, start staring down defensive ends and defensive tackles, because it is a very, very important position of need now. I mean, it is arguably the biggest hole on this team. I mean, you filled the quarterback position, which I think nobody's really going to argue too much. The quarterback position is the most important position in today's NFL. So I've got no issue with that. But we'll go ahead and say that you have got to get some defensive talent. And you've lost Ryan Nielsen. Still got Dennis Allen. You got unknowns on the coaching staff. They need to do everything they can to make sure they don't take a step backwards. Because as much as I love Cameron Jordan, DeMario Davis, they are aging veterans. And you've got a great secondary. You've got amazing corners. Some of the best corner performance in the past few years that you've seen from any team. But definitely got to get it sorted along the D-line. This is, they needed to do that. Most of them were getting old or on the decline. Time to go to young defensive lineman. Slow Caden Ellis move shouldn't have happened. So, Millie, and I want to ask chat this. Here's the big thing for me. I understand the Caden Ellis one because he wasn't going to start. And here were your two options if you're the Saints. One, change your defense from what has been a top 10 defense for several years now, which is a nickel-based defense primarily focused on secondary players and putting secondary players out on the field, extra corner like your nickelback with CJGJ, your safety playing down the box, all that. Or actually play three linebackers on the field with DeMario Davis, Pete Warner, and Caden Ellis. Saints feel like that they didn't need that third starter. Not that they didn't want Caden Ellis, But Caden Ellis was not going to be a guy that saw significant time for them in terms of as a full-timer. And if you go look at his splits over his past 2 years, go look at even last year where like he really popped off. Last year he looked incredible. He had, what, 7 games with, yeah, I'm going to count them, 1, 2, 3, 4. He actually had 4 games where he played 75% of the snaps or more, which sounds super low, right? When we think of how much Caden Ellis really took off in the second half of the year, we think of him basically spending 100% of time on the field. He had 4 games the entire season where he was there 75% or more. Let me double check that. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4. Yep. Just 4. Surprisingly. I'm sorry, 5. I missed one. So he had 5 games of 75% or more out of a 17-game season. And while I do know that New Orleans would have loved to have kept him on the team, what Atlanta's offering him is essentially 100% 17 games. Similar to how Alex Anzalone left. Now, Alex Anzalone left out of an injury thing. You know, Anzalone was never healthy. And everybody saw the potential in Alex Anzalone. And then he goes to Detroit, and he has missed, literally in the past 2 years, he's only missed 3 games total. And last year, he played the entire season. And shout out to Alex Anzalone last year, because he had 125 total tackles. He, you know, pressured the quarterback. I mean, he wasn't a Pro Bowler, but he played a legit, full, healthy season. And I'm happy for him. He never had that in New Orleans. Right, he was never able to stay on the field like that. And he's done it for Detroit. But he became a full-time starter. And even when Anzalone was here, you saw a lot of rotation with the Saints linebacker core. So Caden Ellis now is a 28-year-old first-time full-time starter with the Atlanta Falcons. And I hate that he went to Atlanta, but I'm also happy for him. Crass says, bring back Quan Alexander. Quan Alexander is about 50 years old at this point. But if you want to, sure. I mean, he's not that old. Quan turns 29 this year. He turns 29 this year. And again, his thing is health. Now, last year, 17 games, 12 starts with the Jets. 17 games, 12 starts with the Jets. Maybe he's got some weird old man health kicking in. I don't know what it is with guys getting healthy, not in New Orleans. But that seems to be a thing. So you look at it. Just as a whole, a lot of moves the Saints have to be reeling from a little bit. I don't think they expected Davenport, Onyemata, and Shy Tuttle's actually gotten signed away as well. Caden Ellis, all these guys will be gone like that. The Panthers were signing Shy Tuttle. I don't know if they've actually signed on the dotted line yet, but they were. That was something that was being negotiated. Now, Tuttle was a one tech. He's not a guy that was making a lot of presence in terms of as an interior pass rusher, but he was that one tech, and then obviously he's going to be made famous by the time he sipped Armas Ryan to the ground, and that should be a massive statue in front of the dome, right? I think that should be a massive statue in front of the dome. But as we sit here and go team by team, the Saints have seen a lot of their players kind of come out in a flurry going in the wrong direction. So let's take a look at what other teams around the division have done. Just kind of keep y'all updated. But Atlanta has gotten Lorenzo Carter, a 2-year, $9 million. They did Jonnu Smith. They got him via a trade. They got Chris Lindstrom, 5 years, 105. Now that was just kind of staying. David Onyemata, 3 for 35. Bradley Pinion, the punter, 3 for 8.6. Safety Jesse Bates, who was the running mate with Von Bell over in Cincy, is now heading to Atlanta, 4 years, 64. They got Caleb McGarry, their offensive tackle, re-signed. Caden Ellis, 3 for 21, Taylor Heineke, and then Keith Smith. Let's go down what the Carolina Panthers have done so far. Von Bell, 3 for 22. They did sign Shy Tuttle, 3 for 19.5, and Andy Dalton goes to Carolina, 2 years for $10 million. We're going to see how that plays out. Let's, oh man, that's, what is with all these Saints players going in the division? I guess that's how it works. Tampa Bay has made almost no moves, but we know Tampa's going full-on tank, full-on, you know, blow it up. They've done Jamel Dean, 4 for 52, and Aaron Steen, the guard, 1 for 2.5. And then finally, your New Orleans Saints have got Derek Carr, 4 for 150. They did bring back Juwan Johnson, which I really like. They got JT Gray, re-signed, your star special teamer, 3 for 11.1. Jameis Winston's been brought back as your backup. Tano Passignon at defensive end. and Michael Thomas 1 year for 10. So technically the Saints made six moves so far in free agency. Six of them. The one that has made the most, or the team that's made the most moves, are the Atlanta Falcons, and they've made a lot, not only in terms of players, but also roster personnel. So Phillips says it's actually impressive for Ellis to have seven sacks and only played 75% of the snaps in four games. And five games, Phillip, it was. And I would say the big thing for me is when it comes down to Caden Ellis, and I'm not trying to do like a whole talk bad about him because he's not with the team. Caden Ellis was not a... Again, the Saints only have two starting linebackers. They don't play three starting linebackers. Caden Ellis was not the coverage guy that DeMario Davis or Pete Warner are. Now, maybe he does that in Atlanta. And I really do... I don't know if you can dislike Caden Ellis. Have you ever gotten to listen to his interviews or interact with him? Very likable player. Now, I've never gotten to interview him when I was doing the team. But... everybody, you just watch the same conference as I do. Very likable guy. As far as the Saints were concerned, though, he was not going to, you know, usurp who you already had. And I think a big point is, yeah, DeMario Davis is older, but Pete Warner, granted, you did have, you know, injury happen. Pete Warner's also significantly younger. Like, it's wild to think about. Pete Warner is 5 years younger, or four years and a month younger than Caden Ellis is. That's an entire rookie contract younger. And by the way, he's on a rookie contract. So you weren't going to have him start, so he ends up going to the next team. And now it's up to Caden Ellis to prove that he can be that guy. And it's kind of like the Chauncey Gardner-Johnson thing. You know, Chauncey switched his position, went from being a nickel guy to being a full-time safety with Philly, and now he's got to find somebody to pay him the contract. And that's what Caden Ellis did. Caden Ellis got somebody to pay him the contract. And I'm happy for him, but also... if I was the Saints, I would not be paying my backup linebacker $11 million a year. Doesn't make it a bad move for Atlanta, because I do think it makes Atlanta better to have him there. But, it's not $11 million a year, because he did 3 for 22, so $7.5 million a year. But I still think that you don't pay your backup to do that. Lane says, imagine how much better Warner will be in 5 years. If he stays healthy, if Pete Warner stays healthy, he will be the replacement to Mario Davis. But you do still have to think about DeMario Davis. And as much as I love DeMario Davis, and he is coming off another All-Pro, granted second-team All-Pro, and Pro Bowl season, he will be 34 years old. Or he actually just turned 34 years old like 2 months ago. The man is older than me. And look at this beard. You see this nice, thick ginger beard if you're watching live on the YouTube? This is a grown man beard. DeMario Davis is a grown man. Like, he is aged. For football years, he is super old. You do have to start looking for that at some point, but we'll see how it goes. Lame says, Derek Carr is the second coming of Drew Brees. Interesting fact is he ran a faster 40 than Josh Allen. Neither, that one, that fact don't mean anything to me. And two, I'm not about to laud him up at a Hall of Fame or as a Hall of Fame level guy, but I do think, and I've said this all offseason, Derek Carr was the best quarterback option to go into 2023 with. Mr. Don says, I think Warner's probably entering his prime now, not 3 years from now. Well, if y'all ever believed me for things that I say, and I know, look, I'm a guy with a mic, right? This is a podcast. I don't work for the Saints. You know, even though I was trained as a scout, that doesn't make me infallible. But one thing I harped on and have harped on for years is the third year in the NFL is when you see a guy is who he's going to be. Second year, still part of the transition. My latest proof of this is Cesar Ruiz. Third year, just like I said, give it time. The same time last year, there were plenty of fans literally saying, get rid of Cesar Ruiz, as if other teams did not see him sucking for 2 years and we're going to trade a first rounder for him. He comes into his third year. Granted, he had that little quick injury, but best year of his career, hands down, looked phenomenal. Pete Warner going into his third year, that entire class going into their third year, that 2020 class. If you're the Saints, you've got to lean on heavily here, especially due to some of the guys that you've got departing. But Zach Bond, I'm real curious about on Zach Bond. What's this man going to do? Is he going to do anything? Can somebody get something for Zach Bond? Can somebody call this man and help him out going into their fourth year, third year? Both of them kind of fell a little bit flat. And then Pete Warner, the 2020 class, helping lead the way. You've got to lean more on these young guys that you weren't normally having to do as much. The secondary has worked out great. Paulson Debo first year, coming into his third year, I'm expecting a rebound. You got Alante Taylor going into a second. You got, Landon Young? Is he going to actually pan out in anything? Landon Young, oof, man. We'll see. Again, just so many guys that the Saints have had a shot at that just haven't panned out due to injury that I don't try to be that guy. I really don't. But y'all, why is it that between the Pelicans and the Saints, it seems like this team is the most injured city in all of sports? Maybe I'm still a little bit salty about Zion Williamson, but why does it feel like this is the most injured sports city in America? Timo says, did you see the post from Jameis 1-of-1 comparison between Jameis and Drew Brees? Dude, just don't quit. Timo, I'll tell you the same thing that I've told a lot of people who have asked me. There is a reason that every major writer and everyone who covers the Saints and everybody who studies film has that guy blocked or muted. You can follow him if you want to. But his lone claim to fame was what? A Barstool Sports interview. That says it all for me. Right? I don't give that man any attention. He is blocked on my timeline. I don't pay attention to that at all. NTR says, I will miss Ellis as a backup linebacker, but the D-line needs a complete rebuild. After regressing to 20th in run defense, now I do think they need a veteran linebacker and DT as well in the draft. Defensive tackle is a position I would not mind with the first overall pick, 29 if you're the Saints, or the second. And even with that, I think you still need to address it in free agency. Now, Lester brings up two names I like. One I think that's realistic, one that I think is probably not. Number one, you brought up Puna Ford. I like Puna Ford. I liked him when I was scouting him a few years ago. I actually got to go through that process and, you know, have the interaction with him. He's going to his sixth year. He's a big one tech. He's a healthy player. He's a guy that stays on the field. He's not the most amazing one tech in the world, but I think he's really, really good. Like, when you think great one techs, you're probably thinking Vince Wilfork. And he's not Vince Wilfork. But in terms of fitting the team and putting them right back on track, I think it'd be a fantastic addition. Now, as far as Clark goes, Clark's the one I think that is extremely unlikely to happen simply because of cost. He is coming off a great year or from a great team. He will be 30. I still think he's good, but contract probably going to be an issue. And I'd also not personally like, and maybe this is just me in my opinion, and you're more than welcome to disagree. One, I think he's going to be too expensive, but two, I would dislike to have my starting defensive ends both be 30 plus in the twilights of their careers. I want at least one of those guys on the up and up. I want them coming up and being, you know, 25, 26 or rookie, you know, and that's to the point. And if I get flamed for this, I'm okay with it. I almost rather a Carl Granderson start and try to make him a better run defender than bring in an aging veteran on a very big contract like Frank Clark. Now, I'm not saying that I want Carl Granderson to be the full-time starter. Obviously, we still got to figure out Peyton Turner because he hasn't panned out at all. But I don't want to devote myself to a big contract to a Frank Clark on one, a team that does have to be more mindful of maybe some of the contracts they sign than others do because of the method of which we sign. I'm not saying I don't really have an issue with how the Saints do the contract, but it does make it to where you have to be very careful how you design it. But keep in mind that Marcus Davenport just signed a $13 million one-year prove-it deal. If the prove-it deal is $13 million, what is Frank Clark, who is a Pro Bowl veteran, who is not in the complete twilight of his career, he probably still has good 2 to 3 years left in him, how much is he going to cost? Now, the gamble, if you're Davenport, is one, Davenport's getting good money. Like, that's kind of what he was getting for his fifth-year contract. So he's getting paid. But Davenport's coming off a year with half a sack and not really being healthy. His worst year of his career. But I did say that confidence was probably his biggest issue. And then also his health. But he's 26. Like, he will turn 27 right as the season's starting. You probably got, if he can be a healthy player, 5 to 6 years of Davenport in the league. If he hits his potential, you just cashed in big. If Davenport never hits his potential, then he's just a simple another version of a first-round guy continually being passed around the league in the hopes that his potential will finally work out for that team. The Saints have done the same thing. You know, more power to him. I hope him success. But if I'm talking veterans, I want to bring in some young guys. And if I had to bring in two vets, and I'm glad somebody in the chat brought this name up, Puna Ford and then Sheldon Rankins. I want to bring back Sheldon Rankins. Sheldon, I thought, had a really good 2 years in New York. It was solid. Was it the best? No. But I do think it was really good. And more importantly, he was healthy. And it seemed like he finally got back to some of that level as before. Now, he was not 2018, like, scary good. All right? And he also benefited while being with the Jets of having a very good running mate right next to him. And that helped alleviate the pain a little bit. When you got Quinn and Williams, you know, you don't have to be the guy. So it's a little bit of an easier job in New York when he was there. At the same time, I'm cool with bringing Rankins back. I'm cool with bringing in Puna Ford and then still filling in. And a lot of the names that I'm trying to rattle off are not high-end names. They're not names that are, you know, seen as guys costing $10, $15 million a year. I'm okay with Sheldon Rankins and whatever contract he ends up getting. But I would be very, very, very surprised if Sheldon Rankins is a guy that gets more than $8 million a year, if that. He might only get $7 million. Maybe he only gets $6 million. He's not a guy I expect to get $10 million a year. So that means he's a very viable option for the New Orleans Saints. It's a very realistic option for the New Orleans Saints. And we talked about the emptiness of the roster. Well, now we're talking Cameron Jordan, Tano Passignon, Carl Granderson, Peyton Turner, and now let's add Puna Ford, add in Sheldon Rankins, and, you know, what do you do? Maybe bring back Kentavious Street. There's you $7 million. Usually you're going to keep about $8 million. Sometimes $9 million defensive linemen. I've seen them keep up to $10 million before. Very rarely. Now you're kind of fleshing it out a little bit more. That's not even counting the draft. So options to be made. You only need a couple. And if you can bring in a three tech that's Rankins, who maybe isn't as flashy but a little bit more consistent, bring in Puna to help with the run stop, you're rebuilding. And then you get some a young guy, because there are some young three techs out there who can dominate. They exist. Debo says, maybe we can sign Joe Horn, Deuce, and Charles Grant. We're the poorest team with the poorest money situation. It's come to bite us in the ass. Debo, I feel like you've been watching too much Nick Wright, because the Saints are completely okay, right? The Saints designed their contracts to do what they're doing right now. So every year that you read the Saints are in cap hell, they're not in cap hell. You know, if there is one flaw that you can come at Mickey Loomis for, one flaw, and there was even some data pushed out about this. I talked about it a few nights ago or a few episodes ago, and we just eyeballed it, and it didn't seem that bad. But then somebody actually released an article on it going through the numbers of all GMs. Mickey Loomis has the worst performance in terms of trade value for draft picks to draft picks. Like, when he trades in the draft, he consistently gets less value per pick than anybody else in all the GM jobs, which is whatever. When it comes to contracts, the Saints are not in cap hell. The Saints are fine. The Saints literally just signed the best possible quarterback you could have signed to a contract, right? The cap hell is just this narrative that everybody likes to push. The truth of it is the Saints operate the cap differently than other teams. The best way to describe it is, or the easiest way to describe it is, they are using next year's money. They're using next year's salary cap, not this year's salary cap. Now, if there was like a proverbial tax, which maybe the league institutes one day, where if you borrow too much from the future, the league taxes you for it, then the Saints would have to rethink how they operate. But technically, hear me out, technically, they're actually doing it the cheaper way. Here's why. If the salary cap continues to go up every year, right? We do see that happening every year, except for COVID. It goes up. $55 million this year is actually worth less money next year if the salary cap continues to go up. Now, when the salary cap doesn't go up or it bottoms out, like when COVID hit, your plan went up in smoke. And that is definitely a fatal flaw the plan has. But if the cap continues to rise and you're paying with this year's contract with next year's money, well, then you're always okay. There is no, you know, IRS agent going to come in and demand you pay taxes. That doesn't exist in the league. That doesn't exist in the contract. So the Saints designed Cameron Jordan's contract to be restructured, Ryan Ramczyk's contract to be restructured, Michael Thomas's, all these, it's all designed. So when you look at it just blank, hey, the Saints are negative $100 million in the cap, they're not, because the contract's designed to push. Now, we can debate on whether that is the most effective strategy, and that's fine, but the idea that the Saints don't have money is a myth. They've actually got the same amount any other team has. They simply manipulate it in a different way. Now, we can also argue who they're signing, like re-signing Michael Thomas. Is Michael Thomas worth re-signing to this one-year, $10 million deal? I don't know. Personally, I'm not sold, but I want Michael Thomas to have success, right? If we want to talk about Jameis Winston, well, Jameis Winston just signed a one-year, $8 million deal. Basically, what Jameis Winston did is the phantom year that he had on his contract, they basically just signed it. I mean, it's sure, I guess you don't want to pay, I mean, you won't pay anybody a lot of money. I mean, the goal should always be to have the best team with the least money spent. Everybody wants that goal, but it's not realistic. So is that a debatable move? Sure. I'm not going to argue that that's not a debatable move. Hell, it's a debatable move. Cool. I'm okay with that. It's a debatable move. But does that mean that the Saints have no money? Well, obviously they do, because they just signed Michael Thomas, captain, hasn't played in 2 years, to $10 million, and brought back Jameis Winston to be the backup for eight. So obviously that's okay. Now we need to debate, well, were those moves good? And that's completely fine. We can debate those all day long. But I don't want to push what the national media tries to do as a narrative that the Saints have no money and they can't make moves, because then they're going to keep making moves and people are going to be like, how they keep doing this? So just have to wait and see. Now, Debo adds, the problem is we're going all in to not make the playoffs or get in a wild card game to get bounced. Eventually, we have to start being smart financially and paying. Well, they are being smart financially. In fact, that's kind of the whole thing. The Saints are definitely being smart financially. That's the only reason they're able to do what they do, because they're extremely knowledgeable financially, right? What would you say is Mickey Loomis's biggest mistake? Why do I think it was getting Jairus Byrd? I don't think it was getting Jairus Byrd. I know that's probably not going to be super agreed upon. Jairus Byrd didn't work out because of injury. If I had to say what I think that Mickey Loomis struggles with the most, I just feel like he does not get the best value when he makes trades involving draft picks. And that article that came out recently like really reinforced that for me. I think that's what he struggles the most with. Long-term value through draft picks, I think he struggles the most with. I think that the contracts are fine. The fact that this team has remained competitive, and that nobody here, there's nobody in this chat who has witnessed a team not being competitive in New Orleans football in 20 years, 20 plus years, all right, 20 years, speaks to his method working. Because it's not a new method, and I remind people that all the time. This method of kicking the can down the road, as we were just going to call it, because that's the best way to describe it, well, they've been doing it for well over a decade. Like, they've been doing it a long time. It's not a new strat. It hasn't hurt them before. It's not hurting them now. The only player that they lost, I think they would have liked to have kept, but were never going to pay, was Caden Ellis. Right? Maybe Shy Tuttle. But again, who's really breaking the bank over a one tech? Shy Tuttle. Davenport, after last year, I don't think he was coming back. I don't really think that's an issue. Caden Ellis is probably the only one that makes you go, sucks to lose him. But one thing that New Orleans has shown is they will assign a number to a guy because of what they expect him to do on the field, snap counts, things like that. And they don't move off that number. They did the same thing to Mark Ingram. Remember? Mark Ingram's agent convinced him that he could get $8 million a year and was putting that report out. And the Saints said, here's the contract. Here's what we'll pay you. You don't want it. Bye. And guess what? Bye. And literally the next day, there's Murray. Saints signing somebody else. And that's just the Saints strategy. They've got the money, but they're going to choose how they send it, right? And Soul Vision, yeah, little Jordan Humphrey did join your favorite coach, Sean Payton. So, and again, we can talk about the strat, but what we can't say is that the Saints don't have the money. Because if the Saints don't have the money, there's no way they sign Derek Carr, right? It's just, it can't happen. It's impossible. So, and as Rampage says, why not keep kicking the can as long as there's no penalty? And that's the thing. Until the NFL starts hating the Saints enough to institute some form of penalty for the strategy that they're implementing, there's no reason to stop doing it. And it is what it is. Sam says kicking the can didn't hurt them and they had to pay the Piper in 14, 15, 16. No, that's not true because they continue to sign people and continue to operate the cap freely, Sam. So that's not accurate either. You know, that's not... See, the difficulty is you have to provide context to everything. Why did those teams struggle, right? When you look at 2015 in terms of the Saints, why did those teams struggle? It wasn't because of free agent signings. What did the Saints struggle the most with and then had to overhaul because of their struggles? Right? And I'm just being realistic. I'm not trying to sound condescending or anything like that. Go to the 2014 team. What are you going to find? Consistent struggles on the defensive side of the ball. But let's go into the offseason struggles, right? What were your struggles in 2014? Look at your draft. Stanley Jean-Baptiste, didn't work out at all. Kyrie Fort, linebacker, didn't work out at all. Vinny Sinceri, safety, didn't work out at all. Ronald Powell, linebacker, didn't work out at all. Those were all second to fifth round draft picks. Not a single one worked. Not a single one. About 2015, Stephon Anthony, first round pick, didn't work out at all. Aloe Kikaha, didn't work out at all. PJ Williams is literally the main one that's worked out of that entire set that we're talking about right now. And he's been a rotational guy as a third rounder. Davis Toll never even took a snap for the Saints. Tyler Davison was a one tech who is actually still in the league, but not with New Orleans. And then Damian Swan never worked out. Let's go to the next year, 2016. Keep it moving. Sheldon Rankins in the first round worked out. Von Bell worked out. David Onyemata did not work out. Daniel Lasco was a safety, and they drafted two defensive guys. Basically, what you saw, and I wrote an article about this probably 7 or 8 years ago, the Saints' offensive hit rate, like in terms they drafted on offense and had success, was well over 50%. The defensive hit rate was ungodly low. So it wasn't the free agent signings and the lack of cap space that was killing the team. What was killing the team was they consistently failed to develop talent and find talent that fit them. And when that changed was 2017, when they redid the entire scouting organization. And let me be real clear. They didn't just fire a couple of scouts. They top to bottom wiped the floor clean and started over with Jeff Ireland and a whole new slew of how we do scouting. They changed the entire department. They started looking more into analytics, the athletic marks. They started focusing in with a new scouting regime. And lo and behold, 2017 hits arguably the greatest class ever. And even then, 2018 was still a damn strong class. We just don't like to talk about it because we didn't keep a lot of those players. We didn't keep a lot of those players. They failed out. You know, we had a full roster at the time. And then you go 2019, another good year in terms of picks, but limited picks because, well, we didn't have a lot of room on the team. 2020, didn't have a lot of room on the team, so you only picked four people. You know, it's context is key. But if you go and look at the free agent signings of those years, the Saints were not struggling to sign people. The Saints were still signing people. Now, Fitz might not have been the best, but they didn't struggle to sign. And that's what would indicate you can't afford people. That's what would indicate you can't afford people. And when you look at those different classes, they were able to continuously make moves that kept them competitive. Now, they had to work around things that not a lot of teams always have to. But they had to work around Drew Brees' contract. But it wasn't because of a dead money number that was preventing them. It was the fact that they had, you know, 15, 20% of their cap tied up in one player. That has nothing to do with, oh, you're $50 million negative. It has nothing to do with that at all. That is not the issue. That's a non-issue. The issue is, one, team building is two phases. It's free agency and the draft. And the Saints were failing in the draft, completely failing. And then free agency can be limited by the fact that you had a top-flight quarterback. And you know what? A lot of teams have that same problem. Anytime you want to keep a mega million-dollar quarterback, you're going to struggle to maintain guys. I mean, look at Kansas City. Kansas City's won multiple Super Bowls, but they're letting Frank Clark just walk, and they're not even stopping him because they can't pay. That has nothing to do with dead numbers or anything like that. That's just simple fact that you've got a massive quarterback that is more important than your defensive end. And that's where the Saints were at. That's a similar position that a lot of teams get put in. But you go into 2016's free agency class, and the Saints were signing people. Flame says the Jets may have the best draft class of all time last year. We'll see. We'll see. John, Mr. Don says, I never liked Stanley Jean Baptiste pick from the jump because he was slow. I'm not a fan of slow secondary players. Okay, that's fair. That's fair. Just to give some context, by the way. Because I was curious. The people that we signed in, let me see, I'm trying to bring up all the, I don't know if we really want to go down this rabbit hole, but we did Eric Harris that year, because that was the one you brought up. Kobe Fleener was just never even panned out. That was a huge miss. That was also the year we went after James Laurinaitis to try to rebuild the interior of the linebacking core. Craig Robertson ended up coming in being a stellar special teamer that year. You know, Junior Gallette, you also had the Junior Gallette problem. This is when you were still paying for the fact that Junior Gallette was a horrible person. That kind of bit you in the butt. But overall, I mean, yeah, you made, let's see, oh, you brought in Nick Fairley that year. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 major free agent signings with, what, 5 of them being starters, 4 of them being starters? It's not bad. In terms of who you lost, the worst player that you lost was Benjamin Watson and nobody else. Nobody else of significance. Nobody else was a backup. Yeah. Seems like they're not as good in the lower rounds anymore, Carl Nix and the Bloomsburg OG. Well, I guess it's kind of relative. I think that for Saints fans, your two big defensive end misses are what are, it's standing out, right? That's probably what's standing out the most to you, the big defensive end misses. But I wouldn't say that as a whole they've struggled in early rounds. Let me just rattle off some early rounders for you. Chris Olave, stunning. Trevor Penning, unknown. Alante Taylor, stunning. Peyton Turner, unknown but leaning negative. Pete Warner, stunning. Paulson Debo, middle. He had a great rookie year, meh. Second year. Cesar Ruiz has now moving himself into stunning. Zach Bond's been a disappointment as well as Adam Trautman. Both were, you know, third rounders. Eric McCoy, stunning. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, well, before he decided to mouth off everybody and believe that he deserved $15 million a year, he was pretty damn good, but he was a fourth rounder. Davenport, big miss. Traquan Smith has been a solid contributor. He's nothing crazy, but he's been solid. Lattimore, huge hit. Ramchick, huge hit. Williams, huge hit. Kamara, Anzalone, Hendrickson, all hits. Sheldon Rankins hit. Thomas, the second rounder, was a hit. Von Bell was a hit. Andres Pete's been a hit. Stephon Anthony was a huge miss. Generally speaking, their early rounders are successful, but you remember the big failures really quick. Like, you can name the top two worst, like, immediately. So, we think is the big question mark heading into the season? The defensive line. And by the way, Sam, I still disagree with the Davenport thing this day. I've been on this show for 4 years saying they should not have gone after Davenport. But it is what it is, right? It is what it is. it's at this point, there's nothing really that you can be said about it, but I didn't want him to begin with. I mean, I would have been okay with him in the third round, but as Crass points out, though, I don't blame the scouting department. Getting rid of Ryan Pace was great. The scouting department has drastically improved, and I trust their scouting process. Their success rate in the draft is pretty damn high now compared to a lot of teams. And maybe we should do a deep dive one day where we really go through and say, okay, who's nailing it as a team and who's not? But you go over just the past 4 years. Like, let's just do 2018 through now. I mean, there's really not a lot of players who are nobodies. I mean, you've got a lot of names in there, like, hell, Boston Scott, who's played 60 games in the league, but almost none of it with New Orleans because the team was full. Like, they didn't have a spot for him. But only Cameron Moore and Rick Leonard were washes out for that year. Every other player in that 2018 class has had multiple seasons of double-digit games. But Rick Leonard and Cameron Moore were misses, but they were rounds four and round six. Realistically, the Saints have had a pretty damn impressive hit rate. The key is they need to keep doing it if they want to stay competitive. Davenport was widely regarded as a first rounder, though. I don't think he was, honestly. It depends on who you ask, TJ. I was at the Senior Bowl that year. I talked to people that year, including league people that year, who did not see Davenport as a first rounder. But as we talk about all the time, you only need one or two teams to believe that you're that team. And the reason the Saints traded up was, if I recall, was it what they believed that the Pittsburgh Steelers were going to take him? So they traded in front. But not every team had him as a first-round guy. Some teams did. There are some guys who are like universal first-round guys. And there are some guys who get evaluated that high based on potential. I had him as a third-round talent who had first-round potential. Like, you look at Davenport and how he plays, and you've seen him in New Orleans, you can see the potential to be this elite guy is there. It's undeniable. But there were a lot of teams that would have never considered drafting Davenport in the first round. Like, there would have been 40, 50 people ahead of him. But the Saints had him as, like, their guy. And that's just the nature of how the draft goes, and I think it burned the Saints there. If he had been healthy, it could have been a different story. But he wasn't. So much so that you end up getting Peyton Turner. Peyton Turner is literally a Davenport clone. And now he's not even performing on the field right now. He's going into his third year and he's done almost nothing. You really got to hope that he has a Cesar Ruiz type year. But the potential is basically the same between him and, you know, Davenport. I say Davenport's potential was higher, but that's just the nature of the draft. Sam says Zach Bond's a huge error from a system standpoint. Oh, I agree, Sam. The fit immediately wasn't there. The hope was that you could grow him from that. The hope was that you could change him from just being a stand-up outside rusher. And it didn't work. Although, I'll give him some credit. He has become a very good special teamer. Debo says, why did Jameis even stay? I got nothing to love for him, but you got to save him from himself. Simple answer, Debo. Nobody wanted him. At least nobody wanted him to start. So, that's just the truth. I like Jameis Winston and have had his back from the jump. Nobody was going to let him start. So, why not stay in New Orleans for $8 million? You weren't going to start anywhere else. So, he's now the first-round pick that's now a backup. You know, it is what it is. David says, you want a Hubbard in the first, who was a third-round guy who's made himself into a pretty good player? I have plenty of misses, too. So, like, I can't sit here and act like I've got it all figured out, you know? And just like y'all, I'm a guy with time and a keyboard. But realistically, I did want Sam Hubbard, and he's not really panned out to being like a top 15 pick, which is where Davenport was taken, but he has panned out to be a damn good, solid contributor. I think he would look great opposite Cameron Jordan, but is what it is. But even now, like, you see where he's been in the league, because he's had, you know, 5 years in the league now. Sam Hubbard would not have been worth a first rounder, but he probably would have been worth a second. So I was somewhere in the middle there. Yeah. Tebow says Zach Bond has to go. I heard Malcolm Roach is leaving. Let Roby, Pete go. Let Trey go. So here's my question for you. Why let Pete go? Like, what did Pete do? What did Anders Pete do? What the heck did Anders Pete do? I mean, if you won't let him go, give me a reason. Give me a reason. Because if the fact that there's not a single defensive tackle on this team does not tell you that you need people, I don't know what does. He's never healthy. Well, that's not fair. The correct way to say it is he never plays a complete season. And that I'm fine with. But now, here's my question to you after that. Cool. He's not fully healthy all the time, and he's not. And I've never said that he was. Who replaces him? Because we've spent half the show talking about how there's literally not a single defensive tackle on this team. And you want to get rid of a left guard who's your starter? Just create another hole? Why? Now, if you got a replacement for him, I'm here for it. If you got a replacement, go for it. But Anders Pete, for about 5 years now, when he's on the field, has been a very, very good left guard. Me and him have a personal beef. There you go. That's fine. If you don't like him because of personal beef, that's fine. But in terms of his performance on the field, he's been really good. He's not been healthy for going on 3 years now, though. So, 007 says, nobody's ever healthy in New Orleans. They go elsewhere, and voila, they play a full season. I mentioned that earlier in the show, and that really kind of aggravates me a little bit. And it's got to be something happening in New Orleans. I'm not saying like the city's cursed, but I'm saying what's more than likely is we got a problem with the people that we have running the Pelicans and the Saints health organizations still, because neither of these franchises can stay healthy. Real quick, by the way, I do want to give a shout out to all y'all as fans. Appreciate y'all watching the show. If you are watching, you want to support and actually get something for your support, think about picking you up a Hudak Confessional t-shirt. You can find them on our web store, revjuice.com. Everything's appreciated. Nothing's required, but if you want to keep having content like this, need your support, and I do appreciate it. Just a big quick shout out and quick plug to that. The minute AK's court case is settled, you're still going to get AK, but prepare for six games missing. So Lester says Taylor Wan can play left tackle, kick Trevor to guard. Hell no. Why don't we keep trying to kick Trevor Penning to guard? Leave that man alone. Let him at least see if he's the left tackle who has the athletic profile to be an elite left tackle if he's going to be that guy. And if then move him if he's not, right? Don't move him for the sake of moving him. If you can get a quality left tackle, you would rather have that than a quality left guard. I mean, you want both. But the man's going to have to be left tackle. See if he can be the left tackle. Now, if he can't, all right, well, let's talk about, is he going to be more effective in the inside? But Juwan Johnson can have a Darren Waller-type production. I'm really happy they brought back Juwan Johnson. I really am. I'm really happy about bringing Juwan Johnson back. He has been one of the few bright spots in two rough years. So it'll be difficult to build our defensive front. It will, Gundam. It will. Just like it took several games to get the safeties really feeling Dennis Allen's secondary, it's going to take several games for this new defensive line to find cohesion. And I'm not going to lie to y'all and say that you're just going to sign random people and it's going to work. That's not how it's going to happen. Just keeping the truth out there for you. You're not going to go just sign anybody and things are good to go. Because there are intricacies that you just can't sign somebody and plug them in. Like, who's running the stunt game? Does that call have to come from the defensive line coach because all the guys are new? Or do you have enough rapport between your teammates where y'all can call that stuff yourself because you know the defense so well and you know the offenses you're fighting so well that you can make your own calls? Well, if Cameron Jordan's the only guy there with experience as a full-time starter and the only real guy that the defensive coaching staff trusts, that means that they're going to have their hands held. And it's going to take time to get all that up and going. So, yeah, I think the defensive line is going to take time. Is Jarvis Landry gone? I don't see a reason to re-sign him, but he is a free agent. If you want a running back in the draft, Spears. I mean, I know it's kind of cheating because he's a local hometown guy, but legitimately, I would love Spears. Like, I legit would. He fits the Saints' West Coast offense so much. It's like you're having, you know, Roger Craig from the 80s. I mean, he really does fit what they want to have. Yeah, there's better running backs in terms of complete running backs, but y'all also know that I am a guy who will never, ever advocate for drafting a running back in the first round. So y'all can have Robinson out of Texas, and y'all can let him be the next Ricky Williams. And guess what? I'm going to say the same thing about Robinson that I said about Saquon Barkley. That running back is not going to take you to the Super Bowl. Running backs don't do that. So I'm not worried too much about a running back in the first round. Let somebody else take that big 6 foot, 220 pounder and let him look freaking great. Go for it. Happy for him. Enjoy your draft pick. That's not who I'm going for. That's not who I'm going for. So give me somebody who actually fits with the teams looking at that third round style. That's what I want. And you got to find somebody who can spell Kamara, but also has enough, you know, he's not a beefy guy, but he's got enough to where he can actually take on some of those zone runs. I think the only question you have from him is as long as that ACL's fine. As long as the ACL's fine. And if the Saints don't switch to a power run scheme, he fits really well. So, in terms of other names that you can go for, Kenny McIntosh out of Georgia. Israel, can't pronounce his last name. Abanikanda, something. I watched a couple of him. He was good at ACC. But, yeah. We all basically celebrated the move to Minnesota. What, Davenport's move? I'm not going to celebrate a guy like that, you know, in terms of, like, I want him to have success. I want anybody drafted by the Saints to have success. But, yeah. I mean, even Roshon Johnson out of Texas, I think would fit the Saints because hell, he's used to being the second fiddle. But man, we're already at an hour. Wow. All right. We need to share the link to the Discord, y'all. Y'all need to come join the Discord if you haven't already. We're going to wrap up. We'll be back Thursday. We're going to be back Thursday if y'all want to come jump in to the show. Appreciate y'all for being here tonight. I had a great time. We'll wrap it up because I try not to go too long or else we'd be talking 2 or 3 hours. But let's do another, you know, mock draft and more free agency talk Thursday. Udak, God bless. I appreciate every single one of you. You're all amazing. You're all wonderful. Nikki, let me grab that real quick because you do drop a super chat, buddy. Describe briefly how free agency needs a shakeout so the Saints are more free to draft BPA. For the Saints to draft the best player available and not really worry about anything, defensive line has to get addressed immediately. Sandman, by the way, thank you as well for the super chat. And then I also think that you have to make at least one more move on the offensive side, but particularly you've got to get 1 to 2 defensive linemen, and then you're free to do BPA, which you should be free to do that anyway. Good teams draft best player available in the draft. That's what good teams do. Appreciate y'all. Who dat? God bless. Bring all your questions back Thursday, and we'll get them then. Howdy.